Do you have to move it?
It's recording now.
Oh, no, it's recording.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the third share of Tisha B'Av. If we want to know how to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, so we look in Chazal. Y'all know Chazal tell us that in order to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, the Chofetz Chaim says, in order to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, we have to undo the cause of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. As you all know, the Churban Beis HaMikdash was caused by Sinas Chinam, as Rabbi Goldberg spoke about. So therefore, we have to undo that. We have to have the antidote to Sinas Chinam, which is Ahava. We have to love our fellow Jew. I do think, you could check it up, but if you look in a Frum dictionary, especially a Los Angeles Frum dictionary, and you look up Avas Yisrael, you'll find the following definition. Rabbi Chapnick, that's what you'll find. And I believe that's the reason why Rabbi Chapnick is such a successful machanech. He is one of the most popular, if not the most popular, I don't want to say the most, because you never know who you're insulting, but Baruch Hashem, I've had this discussion that my children have had him, and we're very happy with the product, I have to say. The only thing we regret is Rabbi Chapnick didn't teach girls, so that was a little of a challenge, but Baruch Hashem, our girls came out okay anyways. And also with grown-ups, you see how successful JLE is. And that's because of Rabbi Chapnick. And there's so many people here because everybody loves Rabbi Chapnick because Rabbi Chapnick loves everyone. So we couldn't think of a more appropriate person when we're talking about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash than Rabbi Chapnick. So without further ado, I present to the Kilo Rabbi Chapnick.
With an intro like that, I can only go downhill, you know. Do you have enough handouts? You need some more? Some more? The one virtue of a handout is that you know there's a light at the end of the tunnel that I will eventually finish. So, when we talk about the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, one of the first things that we have to say is a historical perspective that I think is very, very essential. And the historical perspective that is so important to know is that whenever you hear the news about Jerusalem, it's the home and seat of three religions. We need to understand that the Beis HaMikdash, both the first and the second temple, were in existence before Islam was invented. So historically, we have to be very clear about that. It's very hard when we're living thousands of years later, or they're claiming, we're claiming, who's right. We need to understand that historically, the dates, the Beis HaMikdash, the first and the second Beis HaMikdash, was before Islam was created. So we have to have perspective of that, and we also have to know a perspective that it is a general rule of thumb that any place of any holiness for the Jewish people in Israel, the Muslims will create a mosque on top of it. So that with our very short-term historical memory, it's a holy site for Islam. Oh, also the Jews have some claim there as well. So we need to know this very, very clearly, and I think it's a very important point. And It's very interesting. In 1927, there was an earthquake, unfortunately, that struck Yerushalayim, killing people and destroying many buildings, including the Alaska Mosque on the Temple Mount. And Robert Hamilton, director of Antiquities Department during the time of the British mandate there, took advantage and reached an agreement with the Waqf that he would do an archaeological investigation of the site. And he documented what he found, and Hamilton eventually published a book, but he didn't make any mention of any findings that were against what the Waqf wanted him to write. But he did put the findings in the Archives Department, which are now part of the Antiquities Authority Archives in the Rockefeller Museum. And in it, he found that there was a mikveh underneath on Har HaBayis. He also found, well, actually what happened was 13 years ago, one night, or in the night, in the dead of the night, the Israelis unfortunately made a terrible mistake. They gave control of the Har HaBayis to the Muslims. It sounds very PC, it's very nice, but the bottom line was they did excavations to try to eradicate anything that was on the Har HaBayis, on the Temple Mount, that had any connection to Judaism, to again try to block the claim that we had a Beis HaMikdash there. But a group of people got together and started doing excavations of the parts that they threw out and found amazing things there, including bricks that had hollow squares built into them so that hot air could be passed through these bricks. They're not sure what that was. Is it for the people who were Oile Regel, who came three times a year to Yerushalayim? Or was it for the Kahanim to use, because the Kahanim walked around barefoot? So maybe they heated the floor so that it wouldn't be so cold for the Kahanim. They found coins. They found many, many interesting things that were there. All, again, things that even date back to Bais Sheni, to the Second Temple. So we need to understand that a good rule of thumb in general is don't read anything you read in the newspaper. But just historically, the information is incomplete and not let out that in fact the Beis HaMikdash was there and preceded Islam's invention. As Rabbi Summers said about the idea of why the Beit HaMikdash were destroyed, the Gemara in Yuma on Daf Tes Amid Beis 9b says the following idea. The idea of the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of the three cardinal sins, which were Gilui Arayis, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shfichas Damim, because of idol worship, forbidden sexual relations, as well as murder. And the second temple, the second Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed because of sinas chinam, unwarranted hatred. So if we want to rebuild the temple, we have to look at these things and see what we can do to fix it over. So many of you thinking, oh, the three cardinal sins, that's not relevant to me. I'm a pretty good person, and I'm not going to kill anybody. Well, I probably won't kill anybody. Start thinking about this one and that one. But in fact, we need to look at the three cardinal sins first. First of all, the literal meaning of what they are. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shfichas Damim, that we need to avoid putting ourselves in situations where we would be tempted to sin in any of these areas. And this is a very important idea. I think it's important to realize also that many times we have a view of ourselves as this is who I am, and those bad things that people do, I would never do that. And sometimes that's true, because there are bad things that people do that we don't connect to at all, we have no relationship to. But we also do need to understand that sometimes people are put into circumstances that they could be pushed to be in a situation that they never thought possible. And that's why we have different things that we try to protect ourselves from, so that in fact we're not we don't put ourselves in a situation that might be uncomfortable, that might be incorrect, that might be wrong. And therefore, it's important to realize that we have to be cognizant of these three cardinal sins as well. But let's take a little bit of an expanded view of the idea of the three cardinal sins. We talk about idols. What do we worship outside ourselves? Are we very excited when we see a famous Hollywood actor or actress? It's not coincidental that a popular TV show is called American Idol. It's not called Idol for a bad reason, or actually it is for a bad reason, but they don't realize it, because people idolize these people. People want to know, what are the rich and famous doing? As if somehow that's going to rub off on us. It's very interesting. One of the popular tourist sites in Los Angeles are the Hollywood stars on Hollywood Boulevard. You know, that's on the far side of town where I live, you know. What people don't know is that when you are nominated to get a Hollywood star, you have to pay for it. Hollywood Boulevard doesn't pay for it, you pay for it. Now, sometimes the studio that you work for will sometimes kick in the money. So maybe if you have enough pull and you want to pay the money, you could have your own Hollywood star. But it's such a false, oh wow, they finally made a Hollywood star that they paid for. It's like, it's very, very odd. I don't know if they're that popular anymore, but when I was growing up, what was very popular were baseball cards. And it was also popular, and the kids used to be, recess time in yeshiva used to be flipping the cards and seeing who got what and trading. What was also popular, which I don't know if it's popular now as much, was Rebbe cards. Famous rabbis, there were no statistics on the back, you know, it didn't go that far. But, earned run, bracha average, nothing like that. But the idea is that if we idolize something and we look at something, that's a statement. That's what we cherish. There's a lovely couple in my community who someone gave them a gift. And I come into the house, and it's in the hallway, not very prominent, but I come into the house and I say, I see you have four gedolim hanging on your wall. John Lennon, Ringo Starr. I said, I'm sorry, the Beatles don't belong in the Jewish home on the wall. No, it was a gift, and then they'll be insulted. I said, let them be insulted. Take it off the wall. It doesn't belong there. There's actually a story that goes back a while. I'm not sure if it was with the Chazon Ish or not, but there was a small community that wanted to start a school, but there weren't enough children to start the school. And together with the secular kids and the religious kids, there was enough children to start a school. So they were wondering, could they come together and make one school? So this is a touchy subject. How are you going to have a curriculum to satisfy the secular and the non-secular and the religious parents? And they figured they'll ask a shaila. I don't remember who it was. I think it may have been the Chazon Ish. I don't remember. And he said a very puzzling thing. You can make a school together if they agree to allow pictures of great tzaddikim on the walls. That's it? That's the only condition? Yeah, that's the only condition. Okay. They thought he'd list the whole thing with, you know, uniforms and the dress and the curriculum and how much chumash they're going to learn. And no, that was the... Supposedly, this is what he said. And they came back to the group of parents representing the non-religious group, and they said, this is the condition. And the parents said, I'm sorry, it's not for us. Because they understood the power of when you have a picture on the wall of that person, that means that's our goal, that's our motto, that's who we want you to be like. And therefore, the school never happened. So we have to watch out, who do we idolize outside ourselves, and who we want to be associated with, and sort of as if somehow fame or power or money rubs off on us if we hang out with these people. So that's the external aspect of idolizing. What do we worship in ourselves? There's a type of idol worship within ourselves. Maybe it's our job. Maybe it's what others think about us. Maybe it's our ego. I have to be on top. I can't be wrong. I can't lose. And I'm going to give you what I think is a classical example that is the opposite of this idea. There was a fellow who was a very kind-hearted fellow, and he tried to arrange. He was helping somebody raise tzedakah, raise some charity. And what ended up happening was, there was somebody who desperately needed some funds, and he went to help him. And he went over to a wealthy man, and he asked them, "I need help. I'd like to ask for a donation. There's this other person I'm collecting for who really is in a difficult situation. And I don't know whether the rich man's wife had burnt his coffee, or maybe other people had asked him too many times for donations that day, or maybe he just wasn't just a nice guy." The rich man didn't want to be bothered by this man, and turns to him and says, "Leave me alone," and turns around and slaps him. And listen to his response. "Okay, that's for me. What do you have for the poor?" Last time I checked the mirror, that would not have been my response. All right? But what's pshat? How do we understand the story? It wasn't about him and his ego or the embarrassment that he had, the publicly being shamed by the man to slap him. It was about, there's something bigger and greater going on here. I want to help that fellow Jew. I got the slap. That was for me. That doesn't help the fellow Jew at all. He got a donation. It's big. Because a lot of times we're caught up in our ego, we're caught up in what I want and what I need and my list of things. And it's a type of idol worship. And we don't let room for Hashem, we don't let room for somebody else who might not exactly fit the thing that I worship externally or internally about myself. The concept of forbidden sexual relations, expanding the view of that, the concept of tznius, of modesty. It's very interesting. Sometimes for the junior high girls at Teres Emes, we have an open forum. It's an excellent thing that we do, an open forum question and answer session where the girls anonymously write questions on a card, and this way they're not ashamed to ask whatever they want, and I take the questions, I try to answer some of them. So there was one of the girls asked the question, what's wrong with the girl having very, very long hair? So I asked them, does anyone know of a very expensive car? Now I said, if I was the boys' school, the boys for sure would know, but the girls, but actually maybe the girl had a brother. There's a car, Maybrook, am I pronouncing it right? Yeah? Maybach, thank you. See, I knew one of the guys would know. Don't even bother answering. A Maybach. So I said, if someone gave me a Maybach as a gift, on the condition that I drove it, I wouldn't accept. If I could take it and sell it, that's a different story. But if I to drive it, I wouldn't. Why not? Because it's a lack of tznius. There's something, it's too showy, it's too out there. So very cutely, one of the girls raised her hand. Rabbi Chapnik, it has shaded windows. No one would know. So I said, so what do I do for food? I'd lower it a little, get me breakfast. I have to come out eventually, you know. But the idea is not whether or not it's a good car or not a good car. It's probably a great car, but it's too showy. So the concept of tznius, of modesty, yes, there's specific halachas on length of skirt, absolutely, but we need to broaden that and understand what it also is all about. It's about being too showy. It's about being the center in an unhelpful and unhealthy way of people's attention. So tznius on the technical side and on the spiritual side needs something that we need to work at, because again, it's all under the under the category, if you will, of forbidden sexual relations. The concept of watching our eyes, having filters on one's internet, very, very important. Forget about if the kid's around. Even without that, even for the inner child, to speak like we're in California, we all need that kind of protection. We shouldn't put ourselves in that kind of situation. I actually was recently in Brooklyn, and I walked into a grocery store in Borough Park, and I was very touched by something the owner did. He was selling boxes of cereal that had sports figures on it, and he took tape and covered over the women that weren't dressed modestly. In other words, you want to buy the cereal? Buy the cereal, but I don't have to assault everybody else's sensitivities by keeping those pictures on my shelves in my store. It's my store. So it's something to think about. And I think what one of the most important aspects of forbidden sexual relationships and sneers and filters is something even far deeper. And that has to do with realistic expectations versus the indoctrination that we're being given by society. The advertising and movie industry can take absolutely handsome men and pretty women, and it's not good enough. We have to airbrush them and make them even look more beautiful, even though no one exists like that, but that's what we're going to do. And what that does is it really has an impact on how we view relationships, how we try to pick a mate. It's about this instantaneous connection. And it's just not the damage that that's doing to our relationships, to our marriages, to our dating process is beyond our comprehension. And this is something that is critical for us to know, that society is attempting to indoctrinate us and trying to indoctrinate us in a very, very powerful way. And if you think it has no impact, I will share with you an unbelievable study, which you can look up, about the island of Fiji. Fiji, till relatively recently, did not have electricity. And after that, not too far after that, came something called television. On the island of Fiji, generally, women that were heavy set were considered attractive. That was the culture of the island of Fiji. A few short months or a year or two after television was introduced, there was a sharp rise in eating disorders among young women because they weren't as thin as the actresses that they were seeing on TV, and they felt they weren't attractive anymore. Tremendous power this indoctrination has on us. And that's part of why we need to understand the damage of this indoctrination has upon us and why we have to filter ourselves from it. And then there's the concept of murder. The Torah tells us if I embarrass somebody, it's as if I murdered them. The Chassidish Sfarim writes, when Yaakov gave the blessings to the Shvatim, to the tribes in Parshas Vayechi, talks about Shimon Alevi, ba'apam horgu ish. With their anger they killed, referring to the city of Sodom, of Shechem, excuse me, referring to the city of Shechem that they killed out when they saved Dinah. But af not only means anger, but it also means nose. How can you kill somebody with your nose? So the Chassidish Sfarim has to say, someone asks you, how's this person? You go, You didn't say a word. Just made like a little crooked nose. You can kill somebody with body language. You say something displeasurable, you put a smirk on your face, and all of a sudden, that's it. What's the counter? If embarrassing somebody is killing somebody, then what if I build somebody up? What if I make somebody feel very special? If I make them feel special, then I'm not giving them murder, I'm giving them life. And that's something that's a counter to counteract that. Let's take a look a step further. The Maral writes that the first Beis HaMikdash stood in the merit of the holiness of the Avos, of the patriarchs. And let's take a look at the Midos, the characteristics of the Avos. Avraham, Abraham was Chesed, loving kindness. Yitzchak was Avoda, service. Avraham's home was Chesed. He opened it up to everybody. Yitzchak, Isaac, was service. He was willing to be a sacrifice himself. And Yaakov was Yoshev Olam, sat in the tents, he studied Torah. Not coincidentally, these three things are the three things that Pirkei Avos tell us the world stands on. The world stands on the study of Torah and on service of Hashem and on acts of loving kindness. So the three cardinal sins are failures in these three areas. Idol worship is the opposite of service of Hashem. Sexual immorality is the opposite of Torah. Torah is about control, about the head controlling the heart and the body. And murder is the opposite of Chesed. I'd like to pose a question. What are the three most important relationships? Anybody? It's a question. Hashem? You and your spouse? Okay. You and yourself. Well, we're close. The children, friend. Okay, well, what happens if a person doesn't have a spouse or children? So, oh, they're free. No. Actually, it's... I'm sorry? Okay, so the three are yourself and Hashem, yourself and others. Obviously included in that is the spouse, too. I'm not getting the married man off the hook. Take it easy. And yourself. And these three correspond to Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Acts of loving kindness, that's obvious, that's dealing with other people. Service is service to Hashem. And Torah is learning how to have a relationship ultimately with yourself, to be able to really look at yourself and who you are. And I think that part of these three things that we're talking about means that when we talk about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash in our time, we need to look at the importance of each of these relationships and these aspects of the three things that the world stands on and these three characteristics of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Too many times people either don't focus on the relationships at all because they're too busy, or if they do focus, they focus on one or two of them and not on all three. And it's important that we look at all three. The relationship with ourselves, relationship with each other, and relationship with Hashem. The second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, was destroyed because of unwarranted hatred. What does that mean? Did you ever walk into a room and say, ooh, that person I hate, and you never met them before? It's illogical. It doesn't make sense. How could that be? How could I hate somebody for no good reason at all? Well, the truth of the matter is I will tell you that sometimes people do hate people for no good reason. Because maybe they're not from the group that you're in. Maybe they're Sephardi Ashkenazi, Hasidish Litvish, Persian Israeli. Take the pick of your bias within the Jewish community and you make assumptions based upon, maybe even you had, quote, a bad experience. Irrelevant. How is that relevant to this individual? It's not relevant at all. And it's an important lesson that we can learn from Hitler, Yimach Shemay, and Arab terrorists. They're not selective about who they kill. Hitler was not selective. He had people that were more German than the Germans, served in World War I, but they had a great grandmother, father that was Jewish, out. We need to learn from them. We can learn a lot from our enemies on how we should behave. story I read recently about the Greek island of Rhodes, that there was barely any survivors there from World War II. But one person survived, and she said that when the Nazis came in and took over the island, they gathered all the Jews together, approximately 3,000, they put them on a boat to send them to extermination camps. And the boat had left and was 2 days out to sea, and they found one more Jew. They turned the boat around, sent it back to pick up the one Jew. What can we learn from that? We can learn the importance of every Jew. Every Jew is something unique and special. And if the Nazis were willing to waste 4 days, 2 days coming and going, to have another one put onto that boat, then we should learn how much we need to do for our fellow Jews. And that our biases have to be thrown out. And that it's not fair to judge each person by the particular group that you have an issue with, regardless if it's legitimate or not. Each person has to be judged for who they are. What about if I have a reason? I have a whole bunch of people I hate, but I have good reason to hate them. Sorry, that's sin aschinim as well. That's unwarranted hatred. Why? Because the reason isn't good enough. Let's say I'm jealous of what he or she has. Wealth, honor, virtues, a spouse, children, happiness, whatever I think I don't have that the other person has. Or maybe I'm upset because someone insulted me or did something bad to me. The Chafetz Chaim wrote something called the Kuntres Ahavas Yisrael, a pamphlet about loving our fellow Jew, and he goes through at length, not that long, but just goes through a few different issues, but I share one idea with you. He says, what happens if I'm jealous if somebody has a lot of money? I'm jealous. It's interesting, I had one of the Powerball lotteries were very, very high, like 140 million or something. So somebody I know was telling me, oh, if I won, I'd give half the money to the Jewish Learning Exchange. Very nice. He says, wait a second. I started thinking, that's really a lot of money. Well, I don't know if I give half, but I give a third. And he starts thinking, that's really a lot. That's really a lot of money. And as the conversation was going, it was getting less and less and less. And I looked and I said, you didn't even win yet, you're becoming cheap. the other one was, if you keep on cutting it down, now you know why you're not winning. You know, but that's a separate... But people are jealous. And the Chafetz Chaim writes a very powerful idea. And he says, why are people wealthy? And he says, there are two reasons why people are wealthy. Reason number one is because they use the money properly. They give tzedakah, they help out, they don't live ostentatious lives. They do what they need to be doing. That's why they're wealthy. So that's a positive reason why a person is wealthy. And then there's a negative reason why a person is wealthy. The negative reason is because they did a lot of sins, and they maybe did something good, so Hashem wants to pay them back in this world so that the next world they get a free one-way ticket to the basement facilities, no return trip, and they just get their punishment for eternity, and they got their payment for the good things they did in this world. So we have to look at these two things. I may think that if I was wealthy, I would give the money to the good causes, but maybe not, and maybe the money would ruin me. And by the way, you can read books about people who've won the lottery and what it's done to them. Of course, if I won it, that wouldn't happen. But to everybody else, it happens to. So the concept there is that maybe I'm not rich because maybe I wouldn't use the money properly. It would have an effect on me that would be negative. Or maybe I'm not rich because we've done good things, and Hashem wants to give us the reward in the world to come. He doesn't want us to have the payback in this world. The bottom line is that Hashem has enough of anything good that somebody else has. He has enough for us as well. I had the chus, the merit of being close to the Kapishnitz Rebbe Zatzal. And before he became Rebbe, his father was Rebbe first. He went out into business. He went into the diamond business and had to support his family. And he went to some people that his father had set up in business first, and the people were not as gracious as they could have or should have been. But in any event, he went out to business, and he was such sterling character and person that people flocked to him for business, and they respected him a lot and treated him very specially. And he became moderately successful. And one fine day, a person came into him and said, I'd like to start out on this business. Can you give me... The diamond business is pure contacts. That's how you make the business. You know someone who has a particular jewel. You find somebody who's looking for that, and you put them together. That's how you make your business. So the Rebbe said, sure. And he took out his phone book and gave him his entire book of all of the contacts he had. And the man was like, what are you doing? You can't give me everything you have. And the Rebbe looked at him and said, why not? Hashem has enough parnasa for me and for you. Take all the contacts. It's an amazing, amazing idea. The Rebbe didn't stay in business too much longer because unfortunately his father passed away, and he got tremendous pressure from the Satmar Rebbe and the Panovich Rav to take over and become Rebbe in his own right, which he did very fabulously. But in any event, the bottom line is Hashem runs the world. So if we're jealous about somebody else, it means we're forgetting that Hashem runs the world. And jealousy is a form of sinas chinam, unwarranted hatred. And if we understand that Hashem runs the world and that Hashem can provide for us, even if he gave everybody else everything that we want, there's still one for you too, then we don't have to have the sinas chinam, we don't have to have the unwarranted hatred. The Torah review is very strong about this attitude. For example, if Reuven goes over to Shimon and says, Shimon, can you lend me some money? And Shimon says, oh no, I can't lend you any money, sorry, no way. And then a short time later, Shimon goes over to Reuven and says, Reuven, can you lend me some money? Reuven's not allowed to say, you didn't want to lend me the money, so why should I lend you? That's called nekama. That's called taking revenge. A normal human instinct, but it's wrong. When the Torah says you can't feel that way. Not only that, if the person comes over to you after you rejected them, after they rejected you, and he comes over, can you lend it to me? And you say, sure, I'll lend it to you, not like what you did. That's also prohibited. So the Torah has a strong view of how we should do this. So the question we have to ask is, it's all true, sinas chinam is a bad thing, but why is it so bad? We didn't say that there are four cardinal sins, we said there's three cardinal sins. So the Maral explains that the second Beis HaMikdash was in the merit of the holiness of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people. And therefore, a lack of achdus, of unity among Klal Yisrael, automatically means that the temple won't be able to stand. The first Beis HaMikdash was the Avos, was the patriarchs. The failings in the three cardinal sins undermine that structure. This is for the Jewish people. The failings in unwarranted hatred undermined the second temple. And it is the cause of the ongoing exile, and including in that, as the Chafetz Chaim writes, is Lashon Hara, speaking ill about others. And the Chafetz Chaim writes, what's terrible about it is it leads one thing to the other. It leads to fights and jealousy and speaking ill and slander and hurtful language and embarrassing somebody and even to murder. The root of the death of Cain killing Hevel, the first murder in history, came from sinas chinam, unwarranted hatred. And there's another problem with it also. It can be a constant sin. When you hold on to the anger, I'll never trust that person. I'll never do this. I'm so angry. Then that is a constant sin. A person does something wrong, it's wrong, but it's over. But if you're constantly hating, then you're constantly sinning in that realm. If we constantly think about a group of people or a particular person with hatred, and by the way, when we hold on to hatred, someone said a great line one time, resentment is allowing someone to live in your brain rent-free. Resentment is allowing someone to live in your brain rent-free. Why would you want someone in your brain all the time? The person doesn't deserve to be there. Kick them out. Don't think about it anymore. Another idea in understanding this is that there's a fundamental difference between the three cardinal sins and unwarranted hatred. Three cardinal sins were the cause of the destruction of the first temple. According to one of the Hasidic masters, the sinas chinam wasn't the cause of the destruction. That is just what's foundational. If you don't love a fellow Jew, then there's no foundation for the Beis Hamikdash to stand. So it's a condition of existence. When we change the condition, then the Jewish people can have a Beis Hamikdash. If we don't change the condition, then it can't stand. So it's not that it's a avera, sin, according to its opinion, equally bad as the three, though some would argue that it is, but it's just a condition of existence. You can't build a building in air. You need to have a ground. The ground of the Beis Hamikdash must be built with not hating fellow Jews, with there being unity among the Jewish people. So the Chiddush Rim says a very beautiful answer to it. What is the solution to sinas chinam? It's the opposite. The opposite is ahavas chinam, unwarranted love of a fellow Jew. What does unwarranted love mean? Unwarranted love. There was one Rebbe who saw a Jew that was overweight, and he came over to him and said, "Ah, there's a lot of Jew to love." Think about it. How do we look at it? We have a different attitude. But that was his, there's a lot of Jew to love. I was fortunate enough, Simchas, by all of you, to marry off a daughter a few weeks ago. Thank you. And Shabbos Sheva Brachas was the Kala's family's responsibility. That's us. And we rented a little hall, a catering hall, that caters in Borough Park, Brooklyn. That's a place in Brooklyn. That's in New York, you know, whatever. And no, it was great. Some of you will appreciate this. I had somebody who came to me and says, "Rabbi Chambek, I have a wedding in Borough Park. I've never been there before. Well, I have a problem getting a minion there." I said, "No, you won't have a problem getting a minion there." But in any event, the hall we rented is the Renaissance Hall. It's on 59th Street and 14th Avenue. No, I don't get paid to advertise it. But I'll tell you why I'm advertising it. It's a very lovely hall. We came into the hall. There was two large rooms, one for one Sheva Brachas, one for another. And yes, both Baruch Hashem were occupied, one with, for myself and the family, and another for a different family. And then downstairs, there was another room. So I said, they have three rooms for Sheva Brachas. And then I found out that the room downstairs is not for Sheva Brachas. It's for people who are in Brooklyn for Shabbos and don't have a place to eat. And it was set the exact same way, beautiful linen and plates and challah. And many people who maybe don't have a place because nobody will invite them, because when they walk down the street, you cross the street. And this fellow, the owner of the hall, sits downstairs and eats with his family with them. And with waiters, the full, anything that we were served, that's what the people down there were served. It was unbelievable. After Shabbos, I went to pay my bill. The Brinks truck was outside. And I said to him, I was so blown away by what you're doing here, I'd like to pay for one person. I want to be a partner in what you did. It's such a beautiful thing. He says, you are a partner. He says, no, you don't have to pay, you are a partner. Why? Listen to his reasoning. His reasoning is because half the year I don't have Shabbos Shavu Brachos here. But I still provide the food for the people. So when you do a simcha, when you make a Shavu Brachos in my building on Shabbos, you're helping defray the cost to carry me the other weeks when I don't have a simcha. He has from 60 to 80 people for two meals every Shabbos. Okay? Mikam Chisol, special people, the Jewish people. That's called the Havas Chinam. Unwarranted love. He doesn't know who these people are. Some of them by now are regulars, so he knows who they are. But many of them. I was in Lakewood. That's where the wedding was. And there's a store there called Bagel Nash. Very busy restaurant. And on the cashier, there's a sign in Hebrew that says, for the special visitors from Eretz Yisrael that are coming to Lakewood to visit, if you have a card that is given out by the department there that checks the references of the charity people that come collect, if you have a card, you will receive a bagel, scrambled eggs, salad, and coffee free of charge every morning for breakfast. Anything else you want, you have to pay on your own. So walking down the street, and there's a sign on somebody's front lawn in big Hebrew letters. Anybody who's thirsty can take a drink right outside my door. And you look at the door, and right outside the door, a man put a little fridge with cups and drinks. It's hot. And people walking by could go over and just take a drink, free of charge. Innovative, creative ideas of how to show a havas chinam, unwarranted love. And one final story before we do the list. Actually, no, we'll do the list first and then I'll share that final story. Take a look at the last page. 21 days to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, the temple. We'll go through the list quickly. But before you look at the list, the key is what's really important there. The keys mean look, think, feel, and take the initiative. Look, think, feel, and take the initiative. Many people can hear about something or see something and they go, that's terrible. And then they turn to the sports section. What do we do about it? I have a friend of mine who was driving along the street and they saw a woman at the curb going off the curb and going back up again. Going off the curb, going back up again. And thought, oh, must be exercising. And people were smiling and laughing. He decided to investigate. Then he pulled over to the side. And he got out of the car and he says, ma'am, can I help you? And she said, I'm trying to cross the street. And by the time I get my foot off the curb, it's already blinking, don't cross. So I'm going back up on top. And every time when the light is changing, she's doing that and she can't get across to the other side. He stopped the traffic and helped across the street. Many people saw the exact same thing. They thought she's crazy or it was funny or she's exercising. But he looked and he thought and he acted. And that's a key element in doing acts of loving kindness. Looking for opportunities. Looking, what does somebody else need? How can I be of assistance? So let's go through the list quickly. One is doing acts of loving kindness. Two is nice ba'olim chaver, sharing someone else's burden. Three is complimenting somebody. Compliments are free. They don't cost anything. Want me to take the baby? I'll take the baby. Alright. Tefillah, praying for somebody else. Doing an anonymous act of chesed, where you're not getting any kudos. Six is judging somebody favorably. Seven is not listening to negative speech about others individually or by group. Eight is Bikur Chaylim, visiting the sick. Nine is Hachnasas Kala, giving financial support to help someone get married. 10 is rising for the elderly or wise. 11 is not gossiping about others regardless if it's true or not. Making peace, extending oneself to another even if you think you're right, or even if you really, really are right, it doesn't make a difference. Trying to make peace anyway. Including someone who is excluded from the group and making them feel part of the group. Very important. That could be in a shul, that could be at an exercise class, that could be anywhere. New person to the community. Greeting everyone with a happy countenance. A shidduch, trying to help someone find a marriage partner. Cheering somebody up who's down. Studying Torah with someone less knowledgeable than you. How to give charity. The rule is smile. S stands for smile. M is money. I is invite them in. L is listen to them. What's their story? Yeah, you may not be giving them a big donation. Maybe you don't have a lot of money. But what's their story? Give them an ear. Spend a few minutes. And E is invite them to eat something. And I will add something that when you invite them in, sometimes these people are going door to door, they may need to use a restroom, and asking them to use a if they need a restroom is a nice thing as well. 19, being the first person to say hello. Don't wait for the other person to greet you. Notice somebody else and greet them first. Regardless if you know them, you don't know them, they're Jewish, they're not Jewish. I will tell you, by the way, it's much harder to get someone to respond because people are plugged in or plugged out, depending on your perspective. But it's still good. Try to say hello to everybody anyway. 20 is trying to help someone get a job, saving someone else some money, you know, at a sale, let them know. 21 is calling and visiting someone who is lonely. These are just 21 examples. I'd like to conclude with a story that always touches me. It's about a man, a Holocaust survivor, who passed away, and a man walked into the shiva house, to the family, to the children, and wanted to do the mitzvah of nicham avelim, of comforting the mourner. And no one in the family knew who he was. So they said, can we help you? Who are you? He says, you don't know me, and I don't know you. And I didn't even know your father very well. But your father had a dramatic impact on my life. What happened was, your father was in a concentration camp, and we were all starving. And your father was looking through the garbage to see if he could find some potato peels that he could eat. Anything, because we were starving. And I walked by. We didn't know each other. I walked by and asked him, did you find anything to eat? And he looked at me and he said, I'm sorry, I didn't find anything for me and I didn't find anything for you. And I turned away, but then your father came over to me and he gave me a hug. And he said, but don't forget, I love you and Hashem loves you. I love you and Hashem loves you. And that hug stayed with me through the most challenging of times, and I survived the war. And any time I was going through a difficult time, I remember your father's hug. And I remember his words, I love you and Hashem loves you. So when he passed away, I said I was going to come, let the family know what type of father they had and how the hug he gave me 60, 70 years ago had an impact on my life. The Beis HaMikdash is, as far as we know, we haven't heard that it's been rebuilt yet. But if we make a commitment during these days to work on all of these issues, on understanding the importance of the expanded view of watching who we idolize, of what modesty and avoiding sexual relationships means, and what murdering means and could mean, and adapting the characteristics of the Avais, of our forefathers, of Torah Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim, of the study of Torah, of worshipping Hashem and doing acts of loving kindness, and working on the three most important relationships, and letting go of our bias that the terrorists don't have, and letting go of our jealousies and our petty anger at people, and reminding ourselves that Hashem runs the world. And not holding on to negativity, because it ultimately damages us, and working on creating the conditions to create a third and final Beis HaMikdash through the goal of working through getting away from sinas chinam, unwarranted hatred, to ahavas chinam, unwarranted love. Thank you for listening. Have an easy rest of the fast. Any questions?
Can we like to thank Rabbi Chapnick very, very much for the beautiful Dvar Torah, the inspiration and the love that he gives. We also like to thank the Hamlin family who sponsored, was so gracious to sponsor Rabbi Chapnick's beautiful Dvar Torah. Hopefully we will live up to his words and continue to be guided by his actions. In a few minutes, we'll have the Chofetz Chaim Heritage video. I'd like to thank the Waisakis for helping putting it together. There is a charge for admission. Again, we would let you in free, but it goes for Chofetz Chaim Heritage. So please, you could stay, but please check in with Jeff. He'll give you the packet, and also you give him the entrance fee. And the Meretz Hashem will get that going very, very soon. Thank you very much.